Hey everybody, this is Wade with Wade for Wireless, and I'm back. So, this time I'm going to talk about small cells, okay? Small cell deployments, looking for efficiencies, and that's one of the things that I just want to, I know a lot of you are interested in, and I know it's something that most of you are trying to get into because it's a lot of local work, and it's fairly straightforward work, and you with your RF background and your fiber termination and RF termination skills, plus your grounding and installation skills are perfect for the job. Now, you got to stress those skills. You don't want them just bringing some Yahoo in that doesn't understand how radios work. It's very important that you stress your talents here. So I want to bring up the small cell deployment backhaul efficiencies. That's what I'm looking at. And all you guys are in wireless. You're always looking for ways to do things better. So here is where you really have to like volunteer your experience. And the reason I bring this up is because when you're working with carriers, everything's a department. When you work for a small company, you wear about 30 hats and you can see the bigger picture, even though you're concentrating on one part of the project. But the problem is with these big companies is everyone has their little piece of the pie and you got to get them to work together. Now, what I've seen is they don't necessarily work together. You got the indoor guys and you got the outdoor guys and they aren't working together in backhauls. So I'm just going to propose something here that I think is pretty common. However, before I get into that, I got two things. One, I'm going to be speaking at IWCE on March 17th, which from the time I'm recording this, it's the following Tuesday. And I'm going to be out there for a couple days. So if you get out there, just make a point to see me. I'd like to talk to you guys, trying to get the word out, trying to spread the word of Wade for Wireless. And the other thing, this week, this month, I have a sponsor. And I'd like to thank Tower Safety. They do safety training. They're based in Phoenix, Arizona. And I have their website on there, which is towersafety.com. And I'm so happy to have a sponsor. You wouldn't believe how awesome it is. And let me tell you what Tower Safety does. They're offering OSHA 10, OSHA 30 classes, as well as authorized climber, competent climber, and train the trainer classes. For all you tower climbers, all you businesses are going to train your climbers. And by the way, if you're a tower climber, your business has to pay for training. In fact, they should pay for your PPE. They should pay for everything. PPE, personal protective equipment, for those of you who don't know that. And the other thing they offer is RF awareness class, which is very important because we don't know the effects of RF, and it depends what you work on. Like if you're in broadcast, you know, you have high power, it's a big deal. And the other thing you should have is CPR and first aid training. That is huge. Why is that huge? Think about where you work. Even if you're on a rooftop, how quick do you think you can get an ambulance there in the middle of a city? You're going to hope they get there soon. So you're going to want to do all you can to keep your fellow climber alive if something terrible happens. If you're out in the middle of nowhere, you're going to have to do something to keep them alive. You just have to think about these things. You're in a mountaintop, you're in a desert, or you're on a rooftop. None of them are easy to get to. That's why they hired you to do the installation. You know what I'm saying? So, and when I'm out at, oh, by the way, towersafety.com, www.towersafety.com. And if they're based in Phoenix, and if you can't get to Phoenix, they'll come to you. Their phone number is 480-313-0678. If you want to call, and it's where the best get better. I like that tagline, where the best get better. All right. So at IWCE, out there, I'm going to be talking about the tower climber's job and safety, because I think a lot of people don't realize what you climbers do. So, and I'd love to see you guys out there. If you can't make it, you know, no big deal. You're always working. You're always traveling. And for all you tower companies, I know it's hard to get out there. It's really public safety, which is great, because I'd like to thank the fire departments for all the help and support they've given us through the years. You know, they've rescued climbers this year. They come on the scene, the EMTs, they come on the scene when something terrible happens. So I have a great appreciation for fire rescue. You have law enforcement out there. You have utilities and transportation, people like that. I worked with a lot of those people at Alcatel-Lucent when I was in Strategic Industries, and it looks like I'll be working with governments again doing this FirstNet build. Anyway, let me continue on about small cell deployment backhaul efficiencies. I know it's a long title, okay? But let's face it, most of the people I talk to are in deployment. Deployment's where I really try to work with people. So what you're going to do, the reason I brought up about the two different departments, yeah, the indoor teams and the outdoor teams, they don't talk much. You really got to look at it holistically. So if they put it out to bid different teams, it doesn't do you any good. But the whole idea is to make the most of your backhaul. Backhaul is the most expensive thing of this deployment. And I'm not blaming the backhaul guys. Fiber is fiber. Cost a lot of money. And even though it's run everywhere, for some reason, you still have a lot of... let's say you have a lot of costs, a lot of expenses with running fiber. The reason I say it like that is because in wireless, you have a lot of expenses. And the site acquisition guys know this. Before you even get to the deployment, you got to do all this site acquisition. You got to retain rights. You got to do the leasing. And you think you're done? You're not. You got permitting. You got zoning. And on indoor, most of the time, you can get around permitting and zoning. Not always, because the government wants to a fee for everything. They want a fee for every bit of zoning. And their argument is, well, you can't just put anything anywhere. Next thing you know, we'll have whatever, you know. And I get it. I get what they're saying to a point. But let me tell you something. When they started doing that with towers, do they really care what's on a tower? The people that should be concerned about the tower is the owner of the tower. They should make sure it's not overloaded. And they should also make sure it looks good and it's well kept. And if they do that, great. I know they spend a fortune on mowing the grass and weed kill and all that. And quite frankly, that's their job. You're paying rent. Let me tell you something. If you rent an apartment, if something, you expect the apartment building to look good, right? You expect them to mow the grass, to take care of, to plow the snow if you live in the north. You expect them to take care of the place. I mean, you're paying rent. You know, you're paying rent. You deserve something. They got to take care of it. Maintenance is huge. So I know I'm getting way off track, but my point is you're paying rent to go in a building, but you also have to deal with the government. Anytime you deal with the government, it slows things down normally. Now, the FCC passed the rules to help deployments, which is great, and PCIA led the way for that as far as I know, which is great. That's what we need. We need to keep things moving ahead. So with that said, let's just get to deployment. I know I got off track there. Sorry. So here we go. So what you want to do with these small cells, you want to start with the indoor. And if you can get a link from indoor to outdoor, you want to do that. What the link is going to be, I think what you should do, if you can run to the roof with fiber or copper, and you can put a decent amount of bandwidth there, say 100 meg, and you can shoot off the roof down into the streets, that's great, if that's your problem. One of the things when you look at these designs, a lot of times when they go in building, it's usually the building's fault for the design. But if you can really take advantage of that and put a link somewhere in a hole and shoot down from the roof, that'd be great. But don't limit yourself to the roof. You know, the other thing you can do, you can mount in the side of a building. Then you got to go through the building, a little bit of work. You can go through a window if they don't have lead line windows. Don't, I know all you guys, every time I bring something up, you're going to shoot it down. You can go from the rooftop. Well, there's no line of sight from the rooftop. That's why you really have to plan these things out. And I know all you guys have tried to shoot through buildings. The buildings oftentimes, or at least the older buildings, a lot of times they had lead line windows. Lead line windows are really bad for any type of link. But the reason I'm bringing it up is because look at your options. See what you can do. Talk to the landlord. Talk to the building owner. When you do site acquisition, try to see if you can get the roof rights, or at least run copper to the roof and put something up there. I'm not saying you need the full roof rights, but if you can also get space on the roof, it might be much cheaper than trying to run fiber to, say, if you're going to scatter the city with small cells, if you got to run fiber to all those, let me tell you, it's a nightmare, especially if they have to dig up pavement or anything. You got to go through zoning. It just costs a fortune because you're dealing with the streets. Anytime you got to go through the streets, it's a problem. Now, I'll tell you what, one time I did this job in Montgomery, Alabama, where we were putting in wireless backhaul with the city. I think it was the city of Montgomery. The city of Montgomery, you know what they did? They thought ahead. Let me tell you why. They had all their street lights and everything was run underground. And I was doing work for the city, so we had access to this. Now, the only thing about working in the city is everything had to be done at night when there was very little traffic, because we were stringing up on all their light poles. We were putting in basically, I can't remember if it was Wi-Fi or 4.9, but basically point to multi-point system with their backhaul. And they had everything well planned out. They had all their switches and everything. Most of the stuff was underground. I mean, it was really impressive. Why do I bring that up? Because they planned ahead. They knew they would want to expand someday. They planned ahead with the copper, the bandwidth, and the switches. And all we had to do was put the wireless system up. I don't even remember what brand it was. We put it up on all the poles for them. And then we just had to string copper, 10 megabits per second is Cat 5, down into the ground. It went down through the pole. They had hollowed out. They had center. The center of the pole was open. We just went down into the underground, or they had boxes on the side of the building. I think we did something similar like that for the city of Cheyenne out in Wyoming, the place I worked for. It was pretty cool. You know, now people would look at that and think it's a little silly, but because now they do so much more. But you know what? The thing about Wi-Fi 4.9 WiMAX, granted, everyone jokes about it now because it's going away, especially here in the States. You know, Clearwire's gone, but the utilities still use WiMAX. And at the time, what people forget, it was the only solution. And WiMAX really set the stage for this. So when the carriers ignored WiMAX, except Sprint should learn from it. They ignored a lot of the shortcuts and a lot of the ways you mount things. And I remember when I was dealing with the LTE guys early, I was dealing with WiMAX and LTE. The LTE guys all laughed because we called them access points. Well, now, what do they call in these small cells? Access points. Anyway. All right, let me get back here. So when you're planning everything from the inside to the outside, one of the things you can do to add value as a deployment team is try to get the customer to understand that if they spend a little more of the upfront cost, the CapEx, that maybe they can save on monthly reoccurring costs, the OpEx. You got to look at the return on investment. Like if you're going to spend 10 grand up front, how much is it to put the fiber in or the payback for the fiber? Or the other thing with wireless that I've seen several carriers do, they use a wireless backhaul until they can get fiber. That's very common. That was even common at cell sites, at towers. What they would often do is they would put up some type of wireless backhaul, get it up and running, and then when the fiber, or at that time copper maybe, but when it got there, all they had to do was switch from one backhaul to the other. And now that everything is, like with LTE, it's going to be all IP. You're just not going to have T1s are gone. You know, a lot of the voice circuits gone. DS3 is gone. Everything's just going to be a pipe. It's going to be a 10 meg pipe, 100 meg pipe, or a gig pipe. It's going to be just a huge backbone, actually, probably 100 meg or 300 meg. A gig pipe would be a lot of money and possibly not used at this time. Now, in the future, who knows what's going to happen? So I want you guys to think of the deployment from a high level, from the backhaul, and try to get the point out, you know, just see where the other sites are, see if there's some efficiencies, some synergies, because I know, you know, I read a lot about small cells over in the UK. One of the systems they're doing, when they go down a street, they just put, let's say it's a half mile street, they're going to put in three small cells. They'll run fiber wherever the nearest fiber loop is to whatever pole it is, put the small cell there, and then it's all wireless down the rest of the streets. And if you're in a square, you shoot up the street and around the streets, you know, because obviously with backhaul, pretty much everything's line of sight or near line of sight. Even if you're dealing with a near line of sight, you can't be, you know, on the other end of the block shooting through all the buildings. You have to have some semblance of near line of sight. That's why they call it that. So with all that said, it's up to you to make sure this happens. Now, in my article, I put in there about DAS, right? The reason I put in there about DAS, because a lot of times, obviously, if you sell DAS systems, you're going to want to put DAS in. Or the other thing, they have BBU hotels where they just put remote radio heads out and it all strings back to one BBU, which, you know, that's like C-RAN, Cloud RAN, or Virtual RAN. RAN is Radio Access Network. The reason I brought the DAS comparison up is because with DAS, I want to make the distinction. DAS is usually a lot of money. However, it's usually worth the money because it's for a very specific purpose. Either it's for an entire building, a customer, a stadium. It is where you have clear payback and you have clear loading issues at a specific time. Now, DAS may not have to worry about it all the time, and they do handle coverage issues. That's very important, especially when you work in public safety. Coverage is huge. But when you work in the carriers, what they want to do is fill capacity. So I'm going to just go to the most extreme case. Let's look at football stadiums, like during the Super Bowl here in the States, or anything like that, where you have a large stadium that fills up for an event. that's when you want DAS, because DAS is going to be distributed. Let's say you have multiple carriers on it. That's why they have these independent DAS systems, multiple carriers. And here in the States, you would have, say, Sprint, T-Mobile, you would have Verizon Wireless and AT&T Wireless. And the point is to make sure everyone has signal and to make sure everyone has a backhaul link in today's world, because it used to be phone calls. Now it's pictures and Facebook. If you go in an NFL stadium, National Football League, they would have, say, their own apps. The NFL has apps that you can download. Look at videos. That's a big thing. Look at pictures, you know, and they're trying to come up with ways to be more efficient and over the air, you know, like a broadcast link. So I'm just bringing all this up because I want you to understand, while DAS is awesome, DAS is for a specific purpose, whereas small cells are also for a specific purpose, and in theory, they're much cheaper than DAS, although the backhaul makes them less efficient. That's where you have to come in, deployment teams. You have to come in and say, I have a backhaul solution, or why don't we try this? Some carriers get it. They're already doing that. They're already coming up with something like that, but I just want you guys to know this is one thing that you can really offer value. So I also want to give you some background. Usually when they decide where to put DAS or where to put small cells, what the carriers use is a per call measurement data, PCMD. And what they look at that, they don't necessarily see coverage, but they do see calls dropped calls. But now what they also look at is offload. Where is there heavy data that the eNode B, you know, the macro site, can't handle it? If the macro site can't handle the data load, or if it's maxed out all the time and not everybody can get on, you want to look specifically why. Is it an office building? Is it a street? Is it a bus stop? Is it a subway stop? Is there some reason that they can't offload the data? So that's why they choose the areas they choose. It's up to you in deployment to make that deployment as efficient as possible. So if you see a place that they have a problem and you see a link to a building where they already have something, even if they have DAS in a building, take advantage of the backhaul and try to figure out how to get a wireless link there. I just think it makes more sense. Okay. All right. I know I got into a lot of different things, but I know it was high level. I tried to keep it shorter, although I see I'm almost at 20 minutes. So I'll try to cut off before 20 minutes. And, I just want to thank everyone. Again, I got all my products out there. You guys should know. I have a couple books under Wade Sarver. And the Field Worker's Aid for Tower Site Work, Introduction to Tower Climbing. The Tower Worker's Logbook. I still feel it's very important to log your time. And I also have the Scope of Work Training. I'm going to come out with more stuff. I just need time. And also want to point, if you go all the way down to the bottom of my blog, I have the Hubble Foundation's new logo. And Hubble, it's pretty cool looking, actually. And they say, this is the quote from Isaiah 1, verse 17, dedicated to the families of the fallen. That's what Hubble Foundation does. They support the families of the fallen. I just want you guys to think about that. And again, thank you, Tower Safety, for being a sponsor. I really appreciate it. All right, everyone, be smart, be safe. Pay attention to what you're doing, okay? And remember, planning will help you prepare, so plan the deployment. Plan to be safe and plan to be successful. You guys can make a difference out there. We're deployment teams, right? That's the deal. Whether you're doing tower work, a small cell installation, whatever you're doing, even if you're setting up all this backhaul for these companies, you can make a difference. Help them with the plan. I think sometimes they need help. I know they might not listen, but at least you did all you could. All right. See ya.